the lights out until it's bright out. Oh, just another lonely night. Are you willing to sacrifice your life?
They're staying in the shadows. It's called probing. Make sure things are all clear.
Clear for what?
For the rest of the room.
You guys hear that?
He's out there.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I am your host, Tony Merkel, and I am really glad that you're here, and I'm really glad to be here. I want to let you guys know that actually in the next month or so, I'm going to be bringing in a special guest into the studio to interview me. You see, ever since I started the show, I realized that I'm the one doing the interviewing, and you guys are the ones left piecing together who you think your host is. And so I think one episode would be fun for me to just share who I am, share my experiences with things in life, and what I want from you guys is to send some emails my way of questions you want to ask me. So if you email me at theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com, maybe one of your questions will get on the show for me to answer. Also, I want to let you guys know that Lindsay and I had a great time last weekend at the Blobfest where we were vendors. It was just a good time to get outside and meet some new people. And if you want to check out some of the pictures, you can go to the Confessionals Facebook page, give it a like, and you know, like some of those pictures too. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at @TConfessionals. That's @TConfessionals. Now, this week's show, we have Steve coming on, and Steve has had a lot of experiences in his life that all kind of stems from his job. So let's bring on Steve and hear what he has to say. Okay, tonight I have a great guest coming on. Steve has contacted me, and he has three different instances that actually all kind of relate together. Steve, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great, man.
Great. So we were talking before we started recording here, and you're down in Alabama, right?
I am, yes, the northwest corner of Alabama.
Okay, great. So we were talking a little bit, and it turns out you have some different ministries that you do. You're a little bit of a pastor. You do some other things in hospice work. You're kind of just a little bit all, you know, doing a little bit of everything here. Would you like to talk about that at all as far as what you do in hospice and things like that?
Yes, I'm a chaplain for a hospice, and I also do a bereavement counseling. I've been doing that for probably about 6-7 years thereabouts. And I'm also an associate pastor of a church here in town. I've been doing it for probably about 12-13 years. The way everything started, when I first got into, it was before I got into hospice work, I was working at a paper mill, and my wife was pregnant with our firstborn child, which I've got two children, and they're both miracles. I believe all children are miracles, but, you know, doctors told me and my wife that neither one of us could have children, so I really am thankful for my kids. But the job that I was working at the time, I worked all the time, didn't really have any days off. I worked rotating swing shifts, so I, you know, wouldn't have got to see my family very much. So I took a job here locally at a plastics company, and there's a reason I'm telling this, because I believe it all links together. But when I started working at this company, I took a large pay cut just to, you know, have a Monday through Friday, you know, 9-to-5 job. That way I could be at home at night with my family and, you know, but this company was owned by two guys, and they were just very, they were very hateful guys, very mean-spirited. They would say things to belittle you and, you know, would call their employees stupid and things like that. And I'm going to tell you, for a long time, probably about 2 months or so, you know, I, on my way to work, I would pray for the owners, you know, that, you know, God would bless their day and that they would be in a good mood. And this went on for a little while till it got to the point to it, that it would start kind of chipping away at me. And I started harboring, you know, hateful feelings toward one of the owners. And, I'm the type of person that it really bothers me to feel that way about somebody, especially as a Christian. You know, you're not supposed to have hate in your heart for anyone, you know, and it really bothered me. Well, I'll fast forward a little bit to where, I used to have a habit of walking around my house at night and praying, you know, over my family and, you know, just talking to God, because it's quiet where I live. It's real peaceful at night. You can see the stars in the sky. It's just, you know, it's just what I preferred to do. Well, there was this one spot right outside of my window that, I could go outside and put an X on the ground exactly where it was. And it was almost like there was something standing there that I could not see. And it was just an evil presence, and it would make you feel sick to get close to it. And I mean, to the point of, you know, being scared. There's not too many things in life that, you know, that really scare me to that degree. But I mean, it was just sheer terror. Well, I didn't pay much mind to it, until it just kept happening over and over every night. And I talked to my wife about it, and I said, man, there's just something going on. And I told her about the spot outside. And well, one night, I'd fallen asleep on the couch. And my wife, she always would come and wake me up off the couch and say, hey, come get in bed, you know. So that's kind of what I expected, but it's not what happened. I was asleep on the couch, and I was awoke to what sounded like hundreds of voices in my living room. It sounded like a crowded mall during Christmas time. You know how there's just hundreds of people talking at the same time. It's just chatter, you know. This was about the time, you know, my son was just born. He was still in the crib, and, you know, but when I woke up, I opened my eyes, and it was almost like a whoops, you're not supposed to see this kind of thing, you know. And I kind of jokingly say it's like when you're a kid at Chuck E. Cheese or Showbiz or something, and you see the robots underneath, you know, it's like, oh, man, that's kind of ruins your image of, you know, the wonderment and amazement of things. But, when I opened my eyes, this thing was floating right above me, probably about a foot or two, and it was almost face to face with me. And it had a white face. It was solid white, kind of like, I tell people that it looks a lot like one of them Chinese dragons. You know how during Chinese New Year they will have these large dragon puppets, and people will be underneath of it moving it around, you know?
Yeah.
Well, they have a very exaggerated grimace on its face and sharp teeth. And well, this thing was exactly like that. It was almost like a Chinese dragon, but it was a, you know, it was a humanoid, you know, it had two arms and two legs, I guess, like, you know, like a person would, in a head position, you know, just like a person. But its eyes, it had pupils that went up and down, like like slits, kind of like a snake, and its eyes were glowing like an orange, burning orange color, and it had a very large grimace on its face, and it had sharp, pointy teeth, and they were curved inward, kind of like a python, you know. And it looked like a monster, you know. I know it sounds crazy, and I've never heard anybody else, you know, talk about anything that looked this way, but it was terrifying. Well, as soon as I opened my eyes and saw this thing, it got pulled out of the room, like almost like you vacuum up something really quick. It was like it just got sucked out of the room. And that's why I kind of got the impression that, you know, it was kind of a, hey, you're not supposed to see this, you know. But it was talking to me while I was asleep, man. And that's what, you know, was the most disturbing thing to me. And so I jumped up and I ran to the bedroom and I fell a couple of times. It's kind of like I was so scared that my legs were not cooperating with my brain. And I was just in sheer terror. Well, I went and jumped in the bed and I told my wife, I said, man, we got to pray. There was something terrible that just happened. So I went to sleep, and the next day I told my wife more about it. And I was scared because I thought, man, at first I thought, I don't know. I mean, you know, I just kind of chalked it up to maybe I just hallucinated or, you know, had a lapse of mental, I don't know. I mean, I thought it could have been a hallucination. But I just couldn't shake it from my mind. I said, man, that was something that it was real. Because I remember getting up and running to the bedroom and falling. And, you know, I've never had a bad dream or anything like that that caused me to react that way. Well, a couple of days went by, and I was really distraught about this, and it was just burned into my mind. I was worried about it, scared, and I fell asleep on the couch again, and I told myself I wasn't going to do this, but working hard all day, just kind of fall asleep, and but anyhow, I fell asleep on the couch. What woke me up this time was a feeling, and it was the same feeling that I got whenever I would approach the spot outside my bedroom window outside when I would pray at night. And it was just, the only way I can describe it is it was just pure evil and wickedness. I mean, it was almost like I felt every negative emotion that you could feel all wrapped up in one. And I started to, I thought that I was going to get sick. So I went to lift up and I couldn't move. It was almost like being paralyzed. And but I could move my eyes. That's the weird thing. Because I remember scanning around the room with my eyes and thinking, man, you know, this is a terrifying thing. And I've heard of people having sleep paralysis and everything, but I tell people that sleep paralysis doesn't result in a broken couch, you know. But I kept feeling this heaviness pushed down on me, and it was almost like a hydraulic press pushing me down. And, you know, just when I thought, I can't handle no more of this, it kept pushing more and more. And I heard the wooden slats and the, you know, the frame of the couch starting to crack and bend, you know. And I heard several things popping and the springs in the couch. And then all of a sudden, over the back of the couch, I see this like solid black smoky looking stuff just pour over the couch. It almost looked like a I don't know, like a horror movie effect or something. And I thought, man, I am losing my mind. And all of a sudden, the smoke assumed the form of a person. And it wasn't like lofty or see-through or anything. It was like velvet black. You couldn't see through it. It almost looked like a cutout of velvet, the silhouette of the whatever it was. But it was large. It was bigger than the size a person could get. Like, I mean, I know it sounds funny, but it's kind of like the Incredible Hulk. How, you know, he's a lot larger than a normal person. But anyhow, it pressed its forearm across my chest and pushed down, and I could feel my Adam's apple like pushing into my throat. And I was shocked because it was a solid physical, it was just like a person. I could feel the skin of it, and it pressed its face right up against mine. And I got the impression, like, how like when boxers are talking trash and they would get right up in each other's face, like touching faces, you know, it was like a taunt. And I felt, the worst part of this is the feeling that exuded out of this thing. Like, and I can't explain it, but I could feel like fierce anger and hatred for me coming out of this creature. And it was to the point like it would just penetrate your inner person, you know? Like I thought I was going to be violently ill, you know, just from the feeling. And I was scared for my life. I thought, man, this thing is fixing to kill me. And as soon as I thought that, I heard, it was almost like I understood that it knew that it could kill me if it was able to, you know, it had the ability to do that, but it was kind of being restrained by possibly God. I mean, I remember I thought of a story in the book of Job where, you know, Satan could only do to Job what God would allow to happen to Job, but he couldn't take his life, you know. But anyhow, just as quick as it happened, it was over. And I mean, I could feel myself spring up from the couch like I rose up, you know, because the pressure was gone. The weight was off of me. So I got up and ran to the bed, and same scenario, man. I grabbed my wife and I said, well, we got to pray because something terrible just happened. So I just laid there in the bed for hours, and I kept getting up to check on my son because that was my main concern during all of these experiences that I had. I worried about my son more than anything. And that's just being a parent, I guess, you know. And I thought, well, if this thing could, you know, crush me down like that, and there was nothing I could do, man. I couldn't speak. All I could do was think, Lord, help me. Please, God, help me. Save me from this. Because there was nothing I could do within my own strength to, you know, fight against it. And so I was worried about my infant child, you know. I thought, man, this thing could just crush my child. So he slept with us for, you know, several nights. But after this experience, I laid in the bed for a long time, couldn't go to sleep. And it felt like an arm going up under my back and pulling me up, like out of the bed. So my back was arched and contorted, and it literally felt like something was trying to steal my life from me. Like it was trying to pull my spirit out of my body. And I know this sounds crazy, man, but you know, when this happened to me, I never had any intentions of ever telling anybody about it. But people need to know that, you know, these things are real. And I, well, later, probably about a week after all this, I mean, I just lived in constant fear that this thing was going to come back at any time, because basically, I mean, it could do just about anything it wanted to. Well, and this is where things really get off the reservation. And I know, you know, not too many people have several different encounters with different things. It's usually the same thing, you know. But I was outside sitting on my carport, and something told me to get up and to walk out in the middle of the driveway and to just look up. Well, I did. And when I looked up, there was a black triangle floating above my house. And it wasn't going fast, and it wasn't necessarily going slow either, but there was no rocket or no propellers. There was no propulsion. There was no windows. There were no seams. There was no lights. There was no labels or insignia. It looked like a very smooth, like the angles of it were very smooth, and it almost looked like a soft matte type finish on it. And I was shocked. Like, I was in awe of this thing, because I thought, what is this? At first glance, I mean, when you see something like that, man, it's just kind of like you're blown away. And I know people are going to be like, man, why didn't you go get your camera? In my mind, I thought, this is a special moment. And if I go inside, I know as soon as I come back out, it's going to be gone. And I didn't want to miss it. I know it sounds weird, but you never know what you will do in a situation like that until it happens to you. Well, this is what's really strange about it. Not that seeing a giant black triangle floating over your house is not strange, but
yeah,
when it passed and got about maybe a couple blocks past my house, I blinked my eyes, and it turned into ducks in a formation, like probably 10 of them. And it was a perfect triangle formation. And it was almost kind of like, you know, hey, you wasn't supposed to see that either, you know. And I can't explain that, and that's something that I have not ever shared in any other interview or with anybody else. And there's more details about all of these encounters that, you know, I probably won't ever tell anybody, because it's just it's very personal and just strange. It's just very strange. Well, after that, I told my wife, and she was like, there's no way you saw that. And I never told her that it turned into ducks. Like, I blinked my eyes. Before I blinked, black triangle. When I blinked my eyes, ducks. So I don't know if it's a cloaking thing, or I don't know. I can't explain it. You know, when it comes to the unknown and mysterious things, there are no experts. You know, there are people who claim to be experts, but when it comes down to it, nobody really knows anything other than what happens to other people or themselves. So after that happened, I started having a reoccurring dream, or what I thought was a reoccurring dream. And what would happen every time is I would be asleep in my bed, and my bed used to be kind of up against the window. And, I moved it since then, but what would happen is these things would come through the wall on the side of the window, and they would peek in, and they would just stare down at me. And it was almost like I was outside of myself seeing this. It was kind of like watching a movie. But I would see these like five faces poke their heads out right through the wall. And they would look around, and then they would come all the way through the wall. They would never touch my bed, or, you know, they were always floating, like flying through the air. And the best way I can describe them is they had larger heads, but their arms were very bony and emaciated. Like there was very little musculature to these beings. It almost looked like chicken cutlets with skin stretched across. Just very, you know, like an elderly gentleman, like the way their muscle will look, just right. Very emaciated and skinny. But their ribs, I don't know if you remember in school seeing, you know, videos of like Holocaust victims, how they were just, you know, starved to the point of death, like their bellies would almost touch their spine, you know. But they looked just like that. But their arms were very long, and their fingers were very long. Like when they would grab my arms, like one would grab an arm, another one would grab the other arm, then one would grab a leg, and the other one would grab another leg. And there was another one that would kind of oversee the other ones and direct them. Like it even moved its arm to like, hey, take him on, you know. And their face, it didn't have big almond eyes like, you know, like the traditional gray alien or whatever. But its eyes were teeny, like a marble. It looked like a black marble in a very wrinkly, sunk-in eye socket. And it was very wrinkled, like if you've been in a bathtub for too long, your fingers get very wrinkly like a raisin. Well, its whole body looked that way, but right around its eye sockets was just terrible. It was very, they were ugly, very ugly creatures. Well, their nose kind of looked like a smeared, it didn't have a nose really. It just looked like smeared holes stretched out like two slits, like angular slits. And its mouths were just little lines, no lips. I didn't ever see teeth. They never really opened their mouths. No ears. And it's hard to really remember a lot of details, but that face, I'll never forget. I'll never forget that face. Well, their skin was very white to the point of glowing white. It was a luminescent-looking white. And they gave off their own light. It was very strange, like a glow-in-the-dark toy or something, you know. Well, the strange thing was, whenever they'd lift me up, they would take me straight out that window. And then the window never opened. And like part of me went through the window and part of me went through the wall. Just the angle that they took me out. And like most guys, I mean, I sleep in boxers, you know. And during this time of the year, it's freezing cold here in Alabama. I mean, it was probably in the 20s at night. So I go from a nice warm house and bed to going right out in the freezing cold. And I remember just being bitterly cold, like shivering and shaking cold. And it would stop every time, like right there, as soon as I got out the window, nothing else. And I don't remember them doing anything else to me. I don't remember going in anything, but I remember looking up and seeing the stars, like being awake. Well, so here's a strange thing. The very next morning after this first dream, I woke up to go to work, and you know, my wife and I, we don't, you know, use foul language or nothing, but you know, my wife, she saw my back, and you know, I didn't pay no attention to anything, but I had bruises and scratches and marks all over me, around my arms, like you could see the handprints of those things around my arm, like, and they were fingers that they would lap over. Like if you tried to put your hand around your arm, you know, your fingers would not ever touch your hand, you know, it wouldn't fit around your arm. But these things, their hands would wrap all the way around, like, and almost double over. They were so long. And one thing I do remember is whenever they did grab me, it hurt real bad, man, like a real strong, powerful person grabbed my arm. And I could feel like bruises, and you know, I felt like they were just going to cut through my arm. It was almost like when you get your blood pressure taken, how sometimes those automated machines will squeeze it too hard to the point of it like really hurting you, you know. Well, that's what it felt like. And I looked down on my legs, and they were, I mean, a handprint that would go all the way around the big part of my leg, like right above my knee. And it really, really hurt. So my wife was like, you know, what the blank happened to you? And I was like, what do you mean? So I looked in the mirror, and I was like, God, I mean, it looked like somebody had beat the stuffing out of me. And, like, I get emotional sometimes talking about this. But I was terrified thinking about my kid. I thought, man, this has got to stop. Something's got to give. Well, before all this stuff happened, I want to go back and I want to share this, because this is the most amazing and incredible thing that happened throughout all this. And I didn't understand why this happened to me. But before any of these terrible things happened, I was on the couch one night. My wife, her daddy had a heart attack, so she was down in Birmingham, which is the nearest big city to where I'm at. And he was at UAB Hospital. So she went down there with him, and I stayed here because I had to work the next day. And I was laying on the couch, and I was listening to this guy preaching on YouTube on my phone. And, man, I had a feeling come over me that was, like, better than any feeling I've ever felt in my life. And it was pure bliss and joy and just an ecstatic feeling. And I remember I just started laughing because I thought, man, this is just incredible, you know? You know, being a Christian, I believe that a person can feel the presence of God. And I mean, it, you know, it happens to me quite often, you know, when I'm preaching or praying for somebody, or, you know, just praying to God and, you know, talking to him one-on-one, you know. But never like this. This was like an overload of joy. And I remember I got up and started crying because I was just overwhelmed. It was too much. It was almost too much to handle. And when I was walking back through my hallway, I saw an oval, and it looked like a floating cloud of water. Just, it was the most pure, crystal clear water that I've ever seen. It was beautiful, but it was a perfect oval, and it was about the size of a person. Well, within the water was like hundreds and hundreds of these little gold specks, and these specks would beam this bright light. It's not really, I wouldn't call it a light. It's kind of like if you go to the lake on a really bright summer day, how, you know, if the sun shines on the water just right, it'll gleam in your eye.
Yeah.
Well, it was so bright that it would hurt your eyes to look at, you know. It's like looking at the sun reflecting off of a shiny metal. You know, it would just hurt your eyes to look at for too long. Well, for some reason, I just walked right through this cloud, man. I mean, I just stepped right through it. And when I did, I thought, this is so good that I'm going to just die. I thought, this is it. I thought that this, you know, that I was about to meet God, like, personally, you know. And then I kind of got afraid. I prayed. I said, God, I can't handle this. You've got to make this stop. And I know probably anybody, you know, listening will be like, man, why would you say such a thing? You just have to be there. I mean, it was like an overload of joy. I thought I was going to just die and go to heaven. And it was powerful, very powerful. But anyhow, after that encounter, which I believe was an encounter with God, probably, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 months after that's when all the bad stuff started. Now, to tie it all up, I really feel like I know why all that happened to me. And, you know, when I think about the spot outside my house, that, you know, the closer I got to it, the worse I felt, just the evil presence outside. It was almost like a demon or something just waiting for me to open the door to let it in. And I really believe with all my heart that harboring hateful feelings toward the owner of that company was just the break it was looking for. And I think about how many other people out there are, you know, afflicted by things they can't see or things they don't understand. And it's these demonic entities. And another thing that I think about is, how come all three of these different creatures happen around the same period of time, you know? And I know Christians get a good chiding on the comment sections of people that kind of, you know, mock us for thinking that aliens are demons. I mean, I'm just going to say, I don't know. I'm not going to say they are, or I'm not going to say that they're not, because I simply don't know. However, based upon the things that I've experienced all in that short span of time, I believe they're all one and the same. Another detail that I wanted to share was the one gentleman that was one of the owners of the company, the one that, you know, gave me such trouble at work. I later found out that he had a teenage son that committed suicide. And one of the coworkers told me that, you know, him and his wife came home and found their son. You know, he'd shot himself and had to, you know, clean up everything. And I thought, man, how terrible that is. I mean, that's a horror story right there, you know, for that to happen to your child. And the coworker told me that they believe that, you know, the owner, whose son it was, just gave him such a hard time all the time that he just couldn't handle it anymore. And, you know, I thought, well, man, that guy has to live with that every day of his life, man. And I really found a newfound compassion for the guy, you know, having a baby boy myself. You know, I kind of, you know, sympathized with him.
So if I can interject a little bit, I would have some questions, and actually we'll start with the most recent one that just popped in my head. You said that this guy's son died by killing himself, and if I heard you correct, people said that he was really hard on his son, and they feel like that's what drove his son to do that.
Right.
Do you think there could have been any correlation to this guy being hard on his son killing himself, if that's what happened, and to what happened to you? And what I'm saying is, could there have been a demonic entity in both situations that is kind of oppressing this guy that's always angry, and the people that he afflicts with his anger maybe are subject to abuse from this entity?
I totally believe that. Now, I'll tell you another thing that that struck me as odd. Every now and then at work, the guy, he would show up and just kind of walk around, and he would just kind of stand over you and burn holes in your back, staring at you. And every time you'd look up, he'd just be staring right at you. Well, one day, he was eating lunch and just sitting there watching his work, and he just looked real sad that day. And, I just felt led to go over and ask him if he was okay. And I said, would you care if I prayed with you? And he says, I don't really care what you do. And I said, I go to a church right up the road here, and, we'd love to have you. I'll try to kind of extend an olive branch, to the guy and
sure.
Overcome the evil with kindness, But anyhow, what he said, and he said it for a while, I thought, well, maybe he was just joking or trying to, shut the door in my face in a way. But he was like, my wife's a witch. And I just kind of looked at him like, are you for real? I didn't say that, but I just kind of looked at him and said, well, okay. And I walked off. And right about that time that I asked him that, and he said, yeah, my wife's a witch, just very matter-of-factly, is when everything kind of started. And I've always been under the impression that the thing that come in my house and tried to choke me out, and I really believe it's the same thing that torments that guy every day of his life. And it just followed me home one day.
Yeah. The conversation we're about to engage in is, speculative. We can't say for fact, but I do have very strong feelings as to what you just said. And I guess I'll say, a lot of times, and this is something that obviously you're not unfamiliar with being the background you have, but I think a lot of times people that are claiming to be Christians feel that because they say they're a Christian, it negates them from ever having any kind of demonic oppression in their life. And
yeah, I used to think that.
I did too. I did too until recently. I'd say about a year ago or so, I had a very dramatic experience. I don't think I've ever shared it on the show. Don't think I'm prepared to share it on the show yet. But it's real. It's very real. And just because you're claiming to be a Christian doesn't mean you're immune to these kind of things. If this guy was serious, and from what it sounds like he's got a lot of issues, and his wife obviously has a lot of issues. And when you were talking to me about what you saw when you woke up, you heard the chatter, and essentially you said it looked like a monster.
Yeah.
For some reason, and I've never heard of this. So it's just something that just popped in my head. You know, I was thinking astral projection. And I wanted to pick your brain on that a little bit as to what you think, because from what I understand with astral projection, you're not transforming your body when you do that, to look like something else. But what do you think about the whole idea of astral projection and the possibility of maybe this guy's wife or even this guy, maybe, cause you don't know, maybe he was also dabbling in the things, maybe astral projecting themselves, into your home. I mean, do you think,
you know, I wouldn't think that guy would care that much about, but you know, here's the thing. There is no telling, you know, what that guy could be involved in. I mean, I don't know. But the fact that he told me to my face that his wife was a witch, he didn't necessarily say that he was. And, you know, there's another detail that I never have really told anybody else. Because you said that, astral projection, I mean, I don't know a lot about that, but there was a guy who come to faith in Christ in our church, man, and he was a Satanist prior to, and he would tell me that, you know, he would do that. He would travel around and not physically be there, but it's like his spirit would go places. And I thought, man, this guy's crazy, you know. And I used to think all this stuff was crazy, man. But it's, you know, if things like this happen to you, you just about believe anything, man. I mean, all bets really are off. But the time after the encounter with the shadow demon or whatever, when I went to bed, when I laid down, it felt like something was picking me up and trying to take my soul from me, or my spirit, or my life essence, or whatever. I remember I used to have a poodle and a Pekingese, and when we'd go to sleep at night, there's a little spot in our hallway that goes to the right, and our front door is there. Well, we had a little dog pen, like a little fence that you could put up inside your house. And I would keep the dogs in that at night so that they would, you know, not use the bathroom in the house. Well, whenever I felt that arm come under my back like that, I remember instantly walking down the hallway, but not in my body. Like, it was almost like my spirit was traveling down the hallway. And I remember like having a hood or something over, or something over the top of my head and on the side of my face. And it felt like a hood, kind of like Obi-Wan Kenobi's hood, you know? And I remember when I got to the spot in my hallway where the dogs were, I looked over to the right and looked at my little Pekingese, and she looked right up at me, looked right into my eyes, and started, you know, like barking, not barking, but kind of growling and getting gruffy, like I startled her, you know, and she didn't recognize me. Now that I can't make any sense out of that, but it's something I believed happened. But it's just so strange that you said something about astral projection. It's not something that I ever knew anything about, and it's definitely not something I would ever attempt to do. But I believe that it's something that for some reason or another happened to me that night.
When that happened that night, what were you doing again? Were you sleeping or were you awake when this whole thing happened?
I was asleep when that thing come over the back of the couch. I woke up and It was actually the feeling of its presence near me is what woke me up out of a dead sleep. But after that was over and I ran to the bedroom, me and my wife prayed and, you know, I laid down to try to get to sleep. I was just terrified. And that's when I felt that. And that's, you know, when I experienced that going down the hallway and seeing the dog in the spirit. I don't know. I can't make sense out of that.
But what I'm saying is when that actually happened, you know, whatever mm-hmm. your memory is of that, you're saying you were awake when it initially started to happen.
Yes. Yeah. I was not asleep when that happened.
Wow.
I was awake.
I mean, because I know I've heard of people say that they've astro projected and they didn't even try to do it kind of thing. Most of the time I hear stories of people saying, you know, they actually were trying to do it, but,
I would never attempt.
Right.
I tend to keep my spirit right in my body where it belongs. But what's weird, I'll tell you this. I remember my back being arched and like contorted, and I felt like I was dying. Like it was like if you've ever fainted or had a seizure or something, it was kind of that kind of a feeling. And during that experience is when I kind of, I don't know if I left my body or whatever, but I was walking down the hall and saw my dog face to face. And what put a stop to that is, I guess, my back being arched like that kind of bothered my wife asleep. So she kind of, you know, kind of ribbed me with her elbow, like, hey, cut it out. And then that's when everything, like, I felt like I was kind of dropped back down, like whatever had me held up let me go. And when I went back flat on the bed, I grabbed my wife and I said, help me. And she said, what's wrong? I said, something just tried to take my spirit, is what I told her. And there's other things that's happened, man, that I can't make sense out of, but for a long time, now this happened probably for years, this has happened. We'd be laying in the bed and not asleep, but just laying there getting to sleep. And this would startle me so bad. I'm very jumpy at night in my house. You know, after all these, I guess I have good reason to be.
Yeah, no doubt.
Like if I hear a sound, I kind of like my spidey sense tingles, I guess. I jump up and kind of look around like, hey, what's going on? But when we'd be getting to sleep, it felt like something jumped up and pounced on the bed, kind of like a cat. It was about the size of maybe a medium-sized dog. It felt like it was something probably about 50 pounds or bigger. It had weight to it, but little bitty feet. Like, I could feel the little bitty, you know, we have like a Tempur-Pedic bed, so it's kind of hard to tell if something gets on the bed anyway, but it jumped up. It always jumps up on my side of the bed, and when it lands, it's right on my leg, like its feet or legs doesn't really touch mine, but it lands right on my leg, right beside me. And man, I jump up and almost fly out of the bed like a cartoon, man. It's unreal. I would tell my wife, did you feel that? And sometimes she was like, yeah, I did feel something. Like, what was that? She thought I was doing something, but it's something that jumps on our bed, man.
Your poor wife. You keep on rushing into the room, telling her things, waking her up, telling her things. I mean, it's no wonder she can't even get to sleep.
It's unreal, man. But I'm going to tell you this. I don't worry about anything anymore. I remember the day that everything come to an end. me and my wife, we're high school sweethearts, and we've always been best of friends. Gosh, we've been together since we were 16, and I'm 38, just now turned 38. So we've been together a while. But I remember one day I was coming home from work, and I was very distraught this day. Like, I was driving home and just in tears, and I thought, man, what's next? Or, you know, I really thought that, hey, these things were going to actually take my life one night or hurt my child, man. I could have cared less what they would do to me, but, you know, my wife and my son they're just kind of innocent casualties in all this, and I was really terrified that something would happen to them. And I remember coming home from work one day, and my wife pulled in behind me on the road that we live on, and that just never happened. We never got home at the same time. But that day it just worked out like that. And I remember when I saw her pull in, I was just like, gosh, man, I don't know what I would do if something happened to her, you know, from all of this mess. And as soon as I put my car in park, man, I felt that the presence of the Lord, man, it just hit me like a lightning bolt. I felt like empowered to handle this, you know. For the first time during any of these encounters, I felt like, I don't like to say, you know, got my groove back or whatever, because this was a groove like I never had, you know what I mean? It was like God granted me the authority to toss this out of my house for good. And, I mean, it felt like I got struck by lightning, and I mean, I almost felt like I could just punch a train at top speed and just knock it dead to a grinding halt. And I remember getting out of the car, man, and I walked in, and my mom was here. She used to come to the house and watch her son whenever we were at work. And I remember walking through the door and just laying it down, man. I just spoke to anything and everything in my house that was evil and not of God, and I rebuked it in the name of Jesus and anointed my home, and we prayed. And I mean, I was like exhausted after all this, because, you know, it was like laying it down on a level that has never happened to me, you know. And after my mom left, and it was just me and my wife and my little boy, I sat down on the couch, and it felt like I had my eyes closed and was just finally at peace, you know, from all of this. And it literally felt like two fingers touched me right on my forehead, and it felt like fire go all the way from those two fingers to like the inside of my heart, like in the very core fabric of my person, you know. And it was probably the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me. And I've never had any problems since.
Wow. That's really cool to hear. You know, I wanted to bring up a point to you about something you said earlier. And it's not necessarily a point, but just, I don't know, a story to relate to you. You said you felt like your spirit was being pulled out of your body.
Yes.
It's very ironic that you shared that with me tonight, because just last night I did another interview where the guy told me that he was being pulled off his bed, but he said it was more like they were pulling his soul or his spirit off the bed. And he said he physically was being pulled off the bed, but it was like they were pulling something from within him out of his body in the process, you know, being, you know, one third physical, one third spiritual, and one third soul. He felt like there was something inside of him that was being pulled out of his body in the process. Is that how you would describe it?
Absolutely. Like I felt like, I felt like I was hanging on for dear life, like just fighting to keep, I mean, I can't explain it. I don't understand it. When I believe that we are physical people, I believe that we are spiritual beings living in a physical body, you know. But I really do believe that whatever was behind all this was trying to take my spirit man out of me. And I really, I mean, it's no surprise. I mean, I felt like I was dying. It was a very scary feeling. And I used to have fainting spells when I was a kid. It was a, what they call a vasovagal response to seeing blood or gross stuff, you know. And I still get a little queasy seeing blood and guts and things like that, you know. But I always remember as a kid being so scared whenever I would faint because, I mean, I don't know what it's like to die, but I would imagine it feels close to that. That's exactly what I felt like that night. And wow. Then it's just no coincidence that I was traveling down the hallway during all this. And I mean, it's just bizarre. There's a lot of, I believe there's a lot to be learned from all of these experiences that have happened to me. And I believe they're all linked somehow or another. I can't explain them all, and I can't, I'm no expert at all. All I can do is just tell you what happened, you know. I don't really have the know-how to write a book, and I really don't care to have that level of exposure, you know, to, you know, I don't know how many people these, you know, YouTube shows reach, you know, but I thought to myself when I kind of started contacting people to share these experiences, I thought, man, if it helps one person, then it's worth the price of admission for me to know that, man, good will always triumph evil. And, you know, I believe that God created all things and that all things are subject to him. And that's proven true in my life, and I'm no different than anybody else. So I know he's the same God to everybody else as he is to me. And there's people out there suffering in silence and people that are scared to talk to their pastor. And it's like we were talking prior to, you know, this interview that, and there's people in churches all the time, they think that they're impervious to spiritual attack. And, you know, I used to be that guy. I used to think, well, I mean, you know, there's demons and devils out there. But they're out there, you know, in the ethereal or ethereal world or whatever. And they just kind of make people feel bad behind the scenes and kind of mess with your mind here or there. I never had any idea that they were like physical beings that could really physically touch you and cause you physical problems. That was a new one. And, you know, in my book of life, I didn't know. I never dreamed that it's as real as it really is.
Yeah, it's very real. And I don't think many people within the evangelical community quite grasp how real this stuff is. You know, I see it just in my own circles. I mean, nothing in particular, but just, you know, it's like, oh, Tony has that show and that's nice. But people, I don't think they quite grasp the reality of what I'm dealing with when I'm talking to all these different people and their experiences. It's extremely real. And when it comes to the whole idea of witches, the whole idea of that and the idea that somebody could place a curse on somebody else, that's so like foreign and esoteric it's so out there that people sometimes they just can't grasp the concept that that's real, like literally real. People could actually do that to another person. I understand it's hard to grasp and wrap your mind around. But it doesn't matter. Just because you can't wrap your mind around it doesn't mean that you shouldn't try, because it's a real issue, you know? And like you said earlier about the guy, I think you said he was a Satanist or something that, you know, started coming to your church. Let me ask you about that real quick. How did that whole thing work out? Was he somebody who stuck around for a while, or was he?
No, as a matter of fact, he didn't. And you know, I don't know really what become of the guy, but he came to church maybe a month or two, and he got married, man. During a Wednesday night service, you just kind of have to know how our church is. It's a very casual, laid back church, man. And it's like family to me, man. I love my church. Love my church family, man. But the guy, man, he seemed very genuine, and you know, he got baptized and started, him and his wife would counsel with my pastor, who is amazing, man. My pastor is like a dad to me, man. And you know, he'd counseled with them, and he decided that, you know, he and his wife wanted to get married, and he said, well, we want to do it tonight here at church on Wednesday night. So you know, it was kind of an unexpected thing, but it's awesome, man. I mean, I thought, this is fantastic, you know. And everybody kind of cheered them on, you know. They thought, this is great, you know. And that's the way it ought to be, man. When people, you know, are getting their lives together, and I mean, to me, that's a cause for celebration, you know, in my book, you know.
Sure.
But the guy, just as mysteriously as he popped up one Wednesday night and stayed for a month or two, he disappeared, and nobody ever heard anything else out of him or his wife. Nobody knows. He just kind of dropped off. I like to think maybe he moved out of state and started going to another church, maybe, you know. There's just no way to know.
Do you know if his wife had a similar background to him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were steeped in it, man. I mean, we had a men's fellowship. We have one every month. It was usually like the first Saturday of every month, where the guys just get together and we have breakfast and talk about guy stuff. And, you know, I mean, this guy just blew our minds, man, one Saturday, and just was telling us about this foreign world of Satanism, how he got into it and things that he did and things that they would do and what they believed. And he was like, man, I'm glad to be away from it, because it's, you know, it was killing me, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know really what he meant by that, but.
Well, it's something like, I mean, it's hard, man. Like, that stuff's hard, and you know, it's hard to get out of. And even when you get out of it, like it still takes a toll on you. I can totally imagine what he was going through. You know, people that are involved in the occult and things like that, I think I've said it on a previous show, or maybe I've said it in an interview before that hasn't aired yet. I don't know. But, you know, people within the occult, they do purposefully infiltrate churches with the mission to get the church to break up.
That's what he said. He told us mm-hmm. that very thing.
It's one of their main thrusts is to do those kind of things. It's because, you know, it's your opponent, you know, and
that's right.
It's
the enemy.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a game. This isn't a game, you know. And like,
yeah.
I don't want to get too preachy, but no, I mean, what I was going to say was, to be honest with you, when it comes to that particular person situation, my first reaction was when you first brought him up, I was like, okay, I got to learn more about this guy. But the fact that he had come forward and told you guys his past, tells me that he probably was sincere in his, motives
you would just have to have been around the guy, man. Like,
I'm sure
if he was trying to pull the wool over my eyes, then it totally worked, man, because I mean, you know, like he would just cry about, you know, when I don't throw shade on anybody for crying, man. It's good for you to get a good cry out, you know. Sometimes I do for no reason, just, you know, because I'm happy, you know. And, but man, this guy, when he would talk, it just would have tears streaming down his face, man. It was just amazing. Like, I was in awe of this. I thought,
right,
man, this guy went from the polar opposite end of the spectrum to the other end, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, they're not going to tell you what they're doing. They're not going to just tell you what their plan is. And the fact that he came forward and talked about it openly, it tells me that he was probably telling you guys, it was probably a way of
healing,
counseling. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Healing and getting past what his history was. Cause I've heard, different people talk about their past within the occult and satanic churches and what they were involved in and how they got out of it. And, it's rough, man. It's rough. Like there's a lot of mental wear and tear that goes on while you're involved. And cause you literally have to become brainwashed, to the point where what you do doesn't hurt you at all.
Yeah. You get anesthetized, and you know, the Bible calls that, you know, having your conscience seared like with a hot iron, you know. You can dull your conscience to the point of, like you said, not feeling bad for what you ought to feel bad about.
Exactly. You know, I heard this one guy talking about how he was, for lack of better words, because I don't know the proper terminology. Let's just say he was a wizard. You know, he was like some kind of high priest within the satanic church, where like pretty much his job was to go into places and cast spells on certain situations that needed his attention, because he was the go-to guy for these certain things. And he was really talking a lot about different things that they were involved in, and not his particular coven, but other covens that are out there. I mean, I'm talking like some dark stuff, man. Like having babies in secret just for sacrifices and things like that. Like I haven't talked about that kind of stuff on this show, because I don't know how deep I can go with my audience yet and actually share some things that I've come across and that I know or that has been told to me. But I will say that I've heard that. And so like, if you're involved in a coven that's doing that kind of stuff, imagine the kind of psychological toll it takes on you.
Oh, man.
You know? So
it's gotta do something.
It's gotta be liberating when you get out of it, and it has to be like tearful. That, no wonder why the guy cried, you know?
Yeah, like all the time. Just blew me away, man. There's a guy, I want to say his name is Ted Gunderson. He's a, like some retired CIA or FBI operative, man, check him out. If you want to go down that rabbit hole talking about how people have children just for the purpose of, you know, ritualizing them and indoctrinating. This guy, I think he's dead now. He was an elderly gentleman back when he come out and become a whistleblower, you know. But I think his name's Ted Gunderson. But he talks about that very thing, man. It was just, and there's things that goes on in this world, man, behind the scenes and kind of in the green room of life that, man, people probably wouldn't want to know about, even if you could prove it 100%. I mean, people wouldn't want to know, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it is Ted Gunderson. He was in the FBI and basically labeled a whistleblower, coming out and, you know, talking about child exploitation for nice terms and, you know, Satanism, yeah, and things like that. There's actually rumors of him being killed by Illuminati. Obviously, that's speculation, you know, but that's, you know, a rumor at least. And of course, I mean, really, whenever a whistleblower dies, there's going to be rumors like that surrounding their death. But yeah, so definitely somebody that's interesting to at least hear speak. And I do believe that he is dead as well. Yeah, I think he died probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
But man, you know, on just the ministry aspect of things that I've seen in my life, man, we could probably do a whole series on things that I have seen, you know. I've only ever met a couple people that I thought were truly, you know, demon possessed, and you know, I mean, that's a whole different can of worms of things to talk about. And but you know, there's things I've seen that, you know, fully convinced me and, you know, reinforced my own beliefs. That there, I mean, there really is a good and evil aspect to life in general, and, you know, things that, like demonic possession is a real thing I really believe can happen, man. And if you ever have met somebody that you thought was, you know, bona fide possessed by a demon, man, it's a scary thing. It's a scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have seen a teenage girl that, you know, supposedly was possessed by a demon. I didn't have any direct contact with her physically, I should say. I was right there when it was going on. But there was a girl, and she started howling and screaming this god-awful sound. And, you know, anybody can scream and make some awful sounds screaming. And so I always approach things like that, you know, speculative, but,
yeah,
there was probably, now I think I was probably about 18 or 19 years old when I saw this. So it's been a while, but there had to be at least 5-6 people, trying to physically hold this girl down. And she was, it was like, in my mind's eye, what I remember, it almost looks like, you know how like the doggy pile where everybody's just kind of like piled on top of each other. Well,
yeah.
I mean, it, obviously they weren't laying on top of the girl, doggy piling on top of her, but in my mind, that's what it looks like, because all I remember is seeing this the group of people, and it was a lot of men. It was like a doggy pile, and they went up and then they went down. They went up and then went down, because this girl is physically lifting these people up. And
yeah.
And that, I mean, in my mind, I'm like 95% sure she probably was demon possessed. I didn't get involved. I didn't walk over. But I was literally like 5 feet away, but I was like, I'm not getting involved in that.
You know, it's strange, man, because there, you know, there's very little in the Bible that really kind of reveals, you know, that tells you, hey, this is what demon possessed people do. And this is how they act, you know, but there's a story in the Bible where Jesus encountered a demon-possessed person in the Gadarenes region, where the demon spoke and said, you know, suffer us to go into the swine, and they kind of did and drove, ran off the cliff, you know. I always say that's the first instance of devil damn, you know. But but what's really startling is, you know, and I can't quote verbatim, but the Bible says that the man who was possessed was, you know, super strong, so that no man could bind him, and that they shackled him up and chained him, in a remote region of the area there. And what's funny is a lot of the people, you know, that are supposedly possessed today, you know, they exhibit superhuman strength, and there's no way that those people could, you know, really know those details unless they, you know, were very active in their Sunday school class as a kid, much less be able to physically fit the bill, you know, like you right. talked about the girl who was super strong and able to, you know, withstand several people. You know, it just kind of lends credence to that story as, you know, being a truthful account.
Yeah. And I've heard several of those kind of accounts. I mean, my entire life, I've been somebody who just openly talks to people about this kind of stuff. And so I've heard stories from, you know, professors at college and things like that, that just kind of like, in my mind, like, I know it happens. I know it happens. I mean, for me, there's no doubt it happens. I've seen it happen. I've heard people tell me stories, let alone I've read it in the Bible. You know, the story that you were talking about, I mean, that's a story that I've probably read a million times, you know?
Right.
And there's a lot of stuff that goes into that account. So, I mean, yeah, it definitely happens. And I don't even know how we got on that on this topic because, I mean, talk about a rabbit hole, you know, because it has nothing to do with your encounter. But it's good fodder. So,
yeah, it is.
You know, before we get out of here, I wanted to ask you one more question, and, you know, feel free to answer it at any length that you'd like. But the mm-hmm. dream that you were talking about, you know, that basically what I want to say is, do you think it was a dream, or do you think that's something that actually was happening to you? You described it as a recurring dream, but what you described seemed very real.
And it sounds exactly, I mean, when it was happening, you know, the first time it happened, I thought, you know, until I woke up and stood in front of the mirror and was looking at all these marks on my body, and there was just no way that I could physically do this to myself, not in the span of, you know, 7 or 8 hours of sleep, nor would I even want to do this to myself. And there were there was a little symbol on my lower right back, and it was very precise. It was like a row of red dots, perfect little red dots in a line. There was 5 of them, and the next little line was 4, then the next line was 3, then 2, then 1, and it was a perfect upside down triangle on my back. And I tried to chalk it up to, well, maybe I leaned against something, but there was just nothing you know, that I could have bumped into that would do that to me. And it was perfect. It looked purposeful, almost like a tattoo, you know? and then the oversized hand cramps that wrapped around my arms and legs. And, you know, my wife could vouch for every bit of this. And people ask me all the time, you know, the very few people that do know, they say, well, why didn't you take any pictures of yourself? And I said, man, I never had any intention whatsoever to ever tell anybody about this. So that's, you know, I guess hindsight, you know, I wish I would have taken some pictures just to kind of show people, you know, hey, this is what happened. That's the only thing that keeps me from believing that it was just a dream. And I've tried to force myself into thinking or going further, like, what happened next? I really try to jog my mind, and I sit and think, you know, what happened next, and it just never goes anywhere except for a couple of times, and this really is, I will say that this here is, I can't say if this is real, you know, this part, what I'm about to tell you, I can't tell you if this is real or just what my imagination of what happened next, but usually when I'm cutting grass, I'm on my riding mower and I think about things like, you know, I just ponder about these things, you know.
Sure.
A couple times I have thought that, you know, I just see a little snippet here or there of, you know, being in a dark room that you can't see the edges of, but you know that you're in a confined space. You just feel that you're in a confined space, and you can't see anybody there, but you know that there are people around you looking at you, and that you can't move, and that there was a bright light overhead beaming down on me so that I couldn't see what was outside the scope of that light. Now, I don't know. I think that's just, it could just be me thinking, well, this might be what it was like, or it could have been my mind actually remembering what did happen next. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, that part of the story is where I said, you know, it left the reservation here for me when it got into what could possibly be considered aliens. And that's something that the Christian church today definitely don't want to get into. That's a can of worms we really avoid opening.
But they should. I mean, they really should.
Yeah, they really should, because, you know, I believe that if there's ever a day where aliens, or whether they be aliens or demons masquerading as aliens, when they show up on the White House, you know, as people say, I mean, it's going to blindside a lot of people, and it's probably going to shipwreck a lot of people's faith, because
big time.
You know, they don't touch it. They don't think about it. They don't even consider the fact that it could be real. And to me, in my mind, I think, what better way for Satan and demons to possibly shipwreck a whole lot of people's faith at the same time is to come along. And because I'm going to tell you, man, I've heard too many stories and testimonies on YouTube. There was a guy who was a MUFON director. He was a big time guy in the MUFON, and you know, he started putting two and two together, saying that, you know, hey, there's these people who are claiming that they put alien abduction to a dead stop because they mentioned the name Jesus. Well, that didn't sit well with MUFON, and they kind of ousted this guy, but he still goes out and he shares. And I wish I could remember the guy's name, but you probably won't have to search very long to find him. But man, it's very interesting. And to me, I think there's something to be said about that, especially when people share testimonies that these aliens that come from supposedly, you know, millions of light years away, just to tell people that, hey, you know, this Jesus guy was just an ascended master, and, you know, we really created you. I mean, why would they come? You know, it just, to me, there's something kind of sketchy about that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, there's mystery surrounding that whole topic that I think, at the very least, people or organizations. I don't care if it's a Christian church or whatever. We're talking Christian churches because we're both Christians. I'm saying, at the very least, whatever religious organization you're a part of, at the very least, they should give it attention just because of the fact that the odds of somebody in your congregation that have experienced a UFO or an alien abduction, it's very likely that somebody within your congregation, especially if you're a bigger church of a couple hundred people, have experienced something like that. And they need to know what to do about this, you know? So, I mean, I absolutely think it's something that needs to be talked about. And I just recently had learned that actually the Catholic Church actually does a pretty good job with talking about these kinds of things. They don't shy away from the idea of supernatural and all those kind of stuff. So, you know, say what you want about, you know, what you think about the Catholic Church and things like that. They do some things right. If you don't agree with everything, that's, you know, fine. But, you know,
they have probably one of the largest, most expensive, most advanced telescope in the world. I forget where it's at. It's somewhere like in the mountainous region. I think maybe Colorado. It's owned by the Catholic Church, man. You ever wonder, you know, when you think back in the Dark Ages, man, they used to, you know, excommunicate scientists for even considering looking at the stars and studying things. And now, you know, they have one of the largest, most advanced telescopes in the world. It kind of makes you wonder, you know, why would they have a telescope, you know? I mean, you know,
maybe they're looking for something. Though. No, I absolutely agree. I mean, I know the Pope has this Pope that's Pope right now has come out and said that he would baptize aliens if they were there to baptize. And that's not actually not a foreign concept. That's something that actually has been taught in the Catholic Church for a long time. Something of that nature. You know, I'm not Catholic, so I can't really speak definitively, but that's what I was pretty much told. And, you know,
makes you wonder.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, I mean, who knows? But, Stephen, I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us tonight and just kind of sharing your experiences and just sharing your thoughts on the matters at hand. Before we get out of here, do you have any parting words to share with people?
Oh, man, I've probably taken up too much of their time already, but I just, you know, if there's anything to be gleaned from this is just know, man, that God's ultimate power and there's nothing stronger than Him. You know, if you're going through some kind of demonic oppression or, you know, if you feel defeated or beat down, man, lift your eyes up to Him because He's the problem solver. He can fix it.
Right on, man. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for talking tonight, and I really appreciate it. If you have any other experiences, you know how to get a hold of me, man. I definitely want to hear about it.
So I've got several more. Nothing to that magnitude, you know. But I've had some strange encounters, you know.
Well, maybe we'll have to have you back on for another sequel episode of some other things that have happened.
It'd be an honor. Thanks for having me.
Awesome, man. Well, I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Yes, sir.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that's the show, everybody. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get on the show and share an encounter with me, I don't care what kind of encounter it is. It could be a UFO, alien, ghost, Bigfoot, Hat Man, Stick Man. I don't care what kind of man it is. Just shoot me an email at theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. That's theconfessionalspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can go to the website, theconfessionalspodcast.com, hit the connection section, and you can reach me that way as well. You can also get a hold of me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. My Instagram and Twitter handles are the same, which is Tony_Merkel. That's Tony_Merkel. And if you are on iTunes and you'd like to go ahead and rate and review the show, I would greatly appreciate that. Until next week, friends, take care.